I just want to say that from my sharing yesterday, I didn't want to give the impression that I have felt that my life has been hard. It has been easy compared to most people in the world. And I have a few things to say on this subject, either today or tomorrow. We'll see when it comes out. But I really rejoice in the goodness of the Lord in my life. And I have received so much more than I could ever deserve. And I'd like to convey that to you, that I'm a very, very ordinary person, but God is a very great God. And when you get those two related in the right way, some tremendous things happen. Psalm 16:11 is the verse that we started out with yesterday. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. And so if you think of me, if you think of that verse and ask the Lord to make it real to you, then I will consider this week a contribution to your life. I think we got up to the subject of security in the Lord yesterday when we had to quit. And I'm not sure that I can convey to you exactly what happened in my life. It's deeper and more complicated than my words can say. But I can tell you of the circumstance and of the verses that the Lord used, and perhaps He'll put it together for you. I thought I was a very secure person. I had done well in school, and I had a secure family, a happy home. I enjoyed leading. I was very sports-minded and very often captained the teams, etc., etc. I had led the girls in San Francisco and in Detroit, and that had been very fruitful. And so toward the end of my first term in London, we had a small group. It had been a hard term. It had been slow, but it had been good. And my right-hand girl, Anne, was invited to join the Nurses Christian Fellowship. Now, that doesn't sound like a very traumatic thing, does it? And yet, those 2 weeks, while she was praying and asking the Lord to guide her whether she should stay with the Navigators or go to Nurses Christian Fellowship, was a graduate course for me in security in the Lord. And in those days, to be a missionary had more prestige, I think, than these days. We didn't have as many missionaries with the Navigators, and therefore, when we came home, we were somewhat of a celebrity. And the question which was very often asked in those days was, well, where is your Timothy? Who is your replacement out there? And it seemed that it didn't really matter how many people came to Christ or how many grew, but who was your Timothy? And I, of course, thought about that question when Anne was praying about joining Nurses Christian Fellowship. And I visualized myself coming home after my first term abroad and my friends and colleagues saying, Joyce, what happened over there? Well, the thought of saying not much, absolutely devastated my security. It was the most humiliating thing I'd ever thought I might have to do. And during those 2 weeks, as I thought about facing all of my beloved friends at home and having to explain the great and wonderful work that I had accomplished in 4 years, concluding that really not much had happened brought me to the end of myself and to the beginning of a new life. And I remember praying. I bet I prayed as much as Anne did in those days. I prayed. I struggled over the issue of holding Anne with an open hand. And at first I couldn't do it. I couldn't pray without bias. And it was mainly for my selfish reasons and for my reputation. Well, finally, as the days went by, I was able to say, Lord, I want your will for Anne. And whether it is that she would go or stay, your will is acceptable with me. That's what I want. And if I have to say, when I go home, that I have not really accomplished anything, except for what God has done in my life, and that those 4 years would have been worthwhile from my point of view, maybe not the navigator's, from my point of view, they would have been well invested, then that's it. And I remember God using two verses in my life, John 15:5, which I had known for many, many years, but that phrase, for without me, you can do nothing. I had been a fairly self-confident person. At least I knew that I could do about what, just about anything that someone wanted me to do. But without me, you can do nothing. Now, the Holy Spirit has to apply that truth to one's heart to understand it. And he really well and truly applied it to my heart. And I realized for the first time fully, I think fully, that without him, I can do nothing that is spiritual and lasting. And then he gave me the other side of the coin, Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It's the same truth, a little different angle. It isn't that I should go around moping and say, poor old me, I just can't do anything in life. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I get rather irritated with some of the girls when they say, well, I can't do this and I can't do that. Well, where is the Lord in it? And so those two sides of the same truth, without me, you can do nothing. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, what happened was that, you know, when you know the truth makes you free. And I was able to rejoice in what the Lord had done. I was able to look at what the Lord hadn't done for us. I was able to look at my own needs and weaknesses and say, yes, that's true. I don't know how to do that. But it didn't shake the foundation to my life. Well, if I don't know something, I can find out, can't I? And I began to just use that phrase very honestly. And I got some amazing reactions from some of the girls, too. Because they would say, you know, Joyce, where is Abu Dhabi? I haven't the faintest idea. You don't know? No, I really don't. Shall we get a map out and try to find it? Or what do you think about grace? Well, I don't know much about grace. I'm experiencing a little bit. I've never studied it. What do you know about grace? And it just gave a different outlook to my own self, to God, to what ministry really was. And it affected the style of leadership that I was able to have afterwards. I didn't have to know all the answers. I didn't have to bluff when I didn't. The world didn't collapse if everything didn't go just right, because it was the Lord's work. And if it isn't, it's going to crumble anyway. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. And I can tell you, I don't want to labor in vain. It's hard enough laboring, isn't it? without laboring in vain. And I suppose you know the verses in Habakkuk 3, if I can find that book in here somewhere. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he has made my feet like hinds' feet, and makes me walk on my high places. A fruit is not the source of joy and satisfaction. Christ is. And when all else fails, when everything in the world goes wrong, and we have the Lord, then we have enough. We have enough to be the happiest, most joyful people in all the world. Fruit is just added blessing. It isn't necessary. And I began to think of verses such as John 8:29, where Jesus says, I do always those things that please you, Father. And this desire was nailed deep in my heart. Lord, I just want to please you. And I'll leave the results up to you. If I serve you, then the results are yours. And I remember just recently, well, as I came back from my last furlough, I arrived in December, and I was due to go to Kenya in January, and that turnaround was quite a busy time. And I was really frustrated one day. It seemed as if several people had put extra demands, and one or two had misunderstood, and I was just rather in a turmoil. And you know how when things come along, you start arguing mentally? And I was standing in my kitchen alone, looking out the window over the housetops, and all these things were going on in my heart, and I was just arguing like mad. And I realized then, all of a sudden, what was happening. And I thought, well, that's not right. I can't solve these problems. I can't change other people's attitudes. But there's one thing I can do. I can please the Father. And so I said out loud to myself, Lord, I don't care about these things. It doesn't matter to me. All I want to do is to please you. So it's your responsibility to take care of the others. And you know, immediately, peace flooded my mind and my heart, and I haven't the faintest idea what the issues were today. To please the Father. So I hope and pray that this truth will become as meaningful to you as it has to me. And I'm sure that I haven't fathomed the depth of it yet. But it was absolutely transforming. Well, the end was that Anne stayed with us for many years and was such a blessing and support. And then the next term, the Lord gave much fruit and many fine people. Another aspect or lesson I'd like to share is handling pressure. You know, we as women have a way of putting pressure on ourselves, don't we? We're very, very conscientious. I don't want any arguments, Joanne. We're very conscientious, and we really want the details to be taken care of. And as our work, as the demands grow, we become more and more stretched. And pressure can build up very easily. So these good things, these good traits, conscientiousness and attention to detail, can destroy us if we don't keep them in balance. And I've seen quite a number of girls kind of fall apart. And I have been one. So I know what I'm talking about. There's always more to do than what we can do. At least that's been my experience. I have pages of things to do. And I know that it's impossible to get through that do list. And the needs are far greater than we'll ever be able to meet. In our work, there is no end. So what do? And the only thing I know to do is to say, Lord, what do you want me to do? And then to list those things in priority. And to get our life organized so that we are as efficient as possible. And learn to say no to people and yes to God. I used to say yes to anyone who asked me to do something. Sure, somehow I will fit it in. I'll do it. Sometimes I stayed up most of the night doing it. I never, had the courage to say, well, I sure like to do that, but let me explain to you what is on my plate at the moment. Or maybe I can help find someone else to help you out. But not necessarily to feel that just because a person, male or female, asks us to do something, that we have to do it. And I think maturity brings in the fact that we have the freedom to express our situation and explain certain issues and then to work things out for the benefit of everyone concerned. And I also had to learn to ask for help. I think I was quite an independent type person, and I felt that I could probably do many things better than the people who were available to me, so why not do it myself? And some people around, of course, substantiate that fact. I've had many girls say to me, Joyce, is there anything I can do for you? I said, well, sure. And so I give some details. Well, they're not done, are they? So what do? Do them yourself, I guess. So faithfulness on the part of those of us who are around is a vital, important factor in helping those carrying heavy responsibility. Or some girls have said, Joyce, I'd really like to help you. Say, fine, I've got some typing I need done. Oh, well, I wasn't thinking of that. And many girls offer to, go with me on trips or, the fun things. But to do the routine, I'll leave that to you. So learning to draw upon people who are drawable. Well, I became very fatigued at the beginning of my second term. The first term had been very, very demanding. I was carrying various levels of responsibility. I was the only navigator staff person in Britain. And a lot of things just came my way, things that I didn't know how I could get out of. I was living with a large household of girls by then. We had many opportunities throughout the city for ministering to girls and meeting people. So I thought, well, let's build a broad base, and then we'll be able to really concentrate in a year or two. And my life was absolutely strung in all directions. I had no time to relax. I knew what was happening to me. I kind of threw out some pleas for help, but who was there? And one or two people said, well, trust God. Well, I was trusting him. I was holding on to him with all my might. And I was still going under. Well, then furlough came, and that was the busiest furlough I ever had. There was not, I don't think there was any time to rest. I was at the Glen here for 3 months, leading the girls at nine-week conferences. And I was home on a short furlough, so it really wasn't a very restful time. And much of the work was being sent to me from the London office to kind of handle, so in one sense I was still involved over there. Well, I went back tired, and during that first year, I became so tired, exhausted, that I would get up in the morning more tired than I went to bed. I was just, my nerves were strung. My neck was as stiff and tired as could be. You know, when you're too tired to hold your head up, I would go to bed asleep at 12 and awaken at 1. And that was it. And I just cried out to the Lord and said, Lord, help me. I don't know what to do. And finally, it got so bad that others had to take over completely, and I had a rest. And during that time, I felt guilty. I felt that, had God let me down? Did He love me anymore? And it was about 2 years before I really felt fairly decent again. I have never had the same amount of energy since. And I really am on the alert for people who are in that state. I don't want others to go through what I went through. Life is too precious to just work and work and destroy our effectiveness for Christ. And if anyone is in that situation, let us know. I had to learn to say no to certain things. I had to let some things go. And I had to concentrate on the things that I could do and no one else could. I also had to learn to lead a balanced life. You know, days off, it's scriptural, isn't it? Times away from people, I'm one who really needs a little bit of privacy. Being with people all the time drains me completely. And so I need time just to get away. And not many people will suggest it. We have to take personal responsibility. Holidays. You know, year after year you go to conferences, no holiday, you're bound to get tired. And I'm glad that in Europe we're really strong on holidays. By law, in some of the countries, you have to have 4 weeks off. And so even the navigator secretaries have 4 weeks holiday every year. We'll never be short of secretaries again, I can see that. And then developing some outside interests. Life is more than work. And I even circulated the word throughout London, I don't want any phone calls after 11 p.m. Because I would get calls at 12, at 1. One of our reps especially loved to make phone calls between 12 and 1 a.m. And I said, no more. I'm not going to answer the phone after 11 o'clock. And some of the people were rather peeved with me. They thought I was being a little bit old maidish. So I thought, well, okay, that's it. Can't please everybody all the time. I never get phone calls after 11 o'clock anymore. The fear of the Lord is upon everybody. And I've never had to rebuke anyone. It just, the word went out and that was it. Only for emergencies. Well, you may need to do something like this in your own situation. in order that you might be your best for the Lord. And then I needed to keep thinking, what could I do and what must God do? And, you know, you carry the burden for the girls you're trying to help. And when they go through hard things, you go through them with them. You try to protect them, etc. And I realized that I can share the word with someone, but I cannot force her to obey. I can comfort a girl, but I cannot give her peace. I can pray, but I cannot change a heart. Each person is responsible for her own life with God. And it is not up to me to carry on my shoulders any other person. And you know, that is liberating. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Keep thy heart with all diligence." We each keep our own hearts. We don't have to keep the heart of another. And it doesn't mean that we don't care what happens, that we don't carry the prayer burden, but we do not carry another person's life on our shoulders, I don't think. That really helps me in my work. When I'm with a person, I can be with her fully, whether it's down in Kenya or up in Finland or up in Scotland. I can be there. I can show her my concern. I can pray for her. When I go to the next place, I've got to leave those people behind, except in my prayer. I can't keep adding people, nor can you. It's God's responsibility, and He is well able to keep that which has been committed to Him. Well, Psalm 55:22 is another passage that has meant a great deal to me. "Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and He shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved." And then I think it's very, very helpful to be able to confide in at least one responsible friend. And this is where I think single people need to ask the Lord to give them somebody. Couples have each other, but as a single person, how are you going to express the deep concerns on your heart? How are you going to get, just share freely and maybe get some objective feedback? How are you going to get a little bit of understanding? Well, friendship is all I know, and it's very, very important. We need people. We don't have to depend upon people, but we need people. And we need peers. Peer fellowship. And then if we have been under undue pressure, I think we would be wise to look for certain symptoms specifically for ourselves. For example, when I get a certain type of headache, I know that is from fatigue. I can be very, very tired and not have that headache, but when I get that, it won't go away until I go to bed and rest. It only takes a couple of hours of sleep. And so I just slip away and close my door and have a little nap. Some people can't sleep when they get very tired. Others get tension in various parts of the body. Well, you have your own symptoms, so be wise. And then Philippians 4, 6, and 7, I think, are fabulous verses concerning this peace and rest. We really know them so well, and I wonder sometimes whether we go over them too glibly to catch the truth. "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, shall guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. That's a cute little sneeze. And so it behooves us to set aside some extra times for prayer when we're feeling under pressure. It usually goes the other way, doesn't it? I'm too busy to pray. When we're too busy, we have to pray. So just accepting the principle of God's word will protect us from a lot of undue strain. Oh, this time is really going. Maybe I'm talking too long, that's right. I'd like to discuss with you the matter of facing criticism. Have you ever been criticized? It's a very painful, hard thing to take, isn't it? But you know something? It gets easier with practice. Don't expect criticism to ever stop. It will probably increase as your responsibilities increase. So, it gets a little easier with experience. I remember when I left San Francisco in 1953, I loved my work there. I loved the city. There was so much that had been meaningful to me in my life. And yet I knew that God was taking me to Detroit, and I was happy to go. But it happened that Joyce Enright and I drove up from San Francisco to Seattle, and then I took the train across to Detroit. And we started out in the evening and drove most of that night, I think. Well, I was rather numb from just saying goodbye to everyone I knew. My beloved city and all, in my heart there were tears. And there was a girl who rode with us part way. And we were sitting in the back seat talking. She asked if she could talk with me. So our conversation was one-sided. She literally tore me apart from limb to limb. She expressed all the weaknesses that she could think of and gave me a few home truths. Well, you can imagine how I felt. I was so glad it was dark. I was so glad we were traveling at night, because tears were just streaming down my cheeks, of course. I was heartbroken. It was the worst possible moment for a confrontation like that, from my point of view. But I tried to listen to what she had to say. I tried to really profit from it. And I cried to the Lord, "Lord, help me. I just want to be what you want me to be." And I learned an experience, quite a lot from that experience, that there is a time and a place for saying what we have to say. And I think it's helped me a great deal in my work, in my travels, not necessarily to move in on a person at any moment of observation, but to consider the feelings and the welfare of the other person. It isn't just a matter of sharing the truth. It is a matter of sharing the truth in love. And with any criticism, there is some amount of truth. And so we need to get before the Lord and say, "Lord, what do you want to say to me? Show me what is right and what is wrong." And we need to learn to ask questions, get as much out from the other person as possible, but not to let it just devastate us. It isn't people who need to run our lives, it's God. But I tell you, that was a very, very difficult situation for me. And I found that I just had to really run to the Lord and find refuge. (Clears throat) And in the matter of sharing observations, you know, humility is a big factor. I remember memorizing Romans 2:21. You who teach another, do you not teach yourself? And when I see a weakness or when I feel like criticizing someone else, I like to say, Joyce, how are you doing on this? And if I then feel it is needful to go and discuss something with a friend, I can enter into it in a personal way rather than in an accusing way. So that was a very helpful lesson to me. It was a very hard one, very helpful. And it's helpful for us as women to realize that there is some truth in every criticism, regardless of what it is. And that in the end, God will vindicate those who are walking in righteousness. In this case, it's interesting that this girl very soon married outside the Lord's will. Her home broke up very soon. She's been set aside. So you see, the last chapter isn't written yet. And then someone asked if I would make a few remarks about growing older. Not growing old, just older. As far as I'm concerned, life gets better all the time. I don't want to go back one single year. I feel sorry for you young girls. I may not be able to stay up as late as I did at one time. I used to read until 12 or 1 every night. So I don't stay up as late as I used to. I'm not as active in sport as I used to. I have some friends here who are trying to get me to go out jogging, and I haven't, I would, of course, but I don't have the right shoes. But I really feel that I get more mileage out of an ounce of energy than I used to. I really enjoy life. It gets richer, fuller, more interesting. It's like going on a walk. You know, many people think, oh yes, well, I need to get to someone's house, my friend's house. So you start walking and it's a 2-mile walk, and the whole objective of the walk is to get to the other person's house. Saw nothing on the way, experienced nothing on the way. And you know, a walk can be enjoyable every step. You see the flowers along the way. You see the beautiful sun. You see the trees. You see the birds. And then you get there to the friend's house and you enjoy that too. And this, I think, is something that has happened to me as the years have gone by. I enjoy the walk. I enjoy the goal as well. And just walking from here to the Glen, is the objective just to get over there for lunch? Have we seen anything along the way? Have we been refreshed by any of the beautiful nature around us? Well, that's been a blessing. And I've discovered that 1 Timothy 6 has become increasingly meaningful as well. Verse 17. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. We should be the most joyful people in all the world, just reveling in the riches of God. And as we look back, as I grow older and I look back further, and the thing that strikes me is that God is always faithful. And I've had a few more years of seeing his faithfulness than you have. And that's exciting. And I know that 10 years from now, he'll still be faithful. I will know him a little more. And therefore, growing older is really exciting. Well, apart from just appreciation of God and his creation, I think that growing older does require a different lifestyle, or at least a lifestyle suitable to one's situation. And I found that as my job, my responsibilities, capacities have changed, so have I have adapted other things. For example, I haven't lived with anyone for 8 years. Well, that was quite a transition after living with girls for 20 years in training apartments. And it wasn't so hard for me to be alone because I wasn't alone very much. But coping with the expectations of others, I think, was the most difficult. People would say, Joyce, who's living with you now? Oh, no one. Oh. You're not training anyone these days? No, I don't have anyone living with me. Now, I live with people, but they don't live with me. I counted up one average year that I had stayed with 150 girls in different apartments. That's not bad for a year's living, is it? Plus conferences. Or that included guests. I have guests about half the time that I'm home. So I had to get over that feeling of guilt. No, I don't live with anyone anymore. At least I didn't until last month. Friend moved in with me. So I feel, yes, at my particular point in life, I do not have to have a training apartment in order to be a girl's representative, a woman's representative. And there are certain other adaptations that I have had to make. Now, I'm not trying to get you to all live alone and so on, but remember that as you grow older, things change. And the principle, I think, is to find the most effective lifestyle that we can possibly find so we can make our greatest impact for Christ. And not become selfish. It's in order that we might be more available to God and to people. And I find that when I really am tired after a lengthy trip, just knowing that I can go home and not have to give out to a household of people refurnishes my spirit and soul so that I can be better for the next trip. And that's my objective. Well, then sometimes fear creeps in about the future. That is true. I think I am one who wants to trust the Lord. I can believe, I know that God is trustworthy. But sometimes the thoughts come, well, what's going to happen to me? What will my work be in 10 years? In 20 years. And I decided in Helsinki on a recent trip that I had some time with some teenagers and we had a great time. I thought, when I get too old to work with young adults, I'll work with teenagers. By the way, how many of you accepted Christ before you were 15. Would you raise your hand? Yeah, I think I will work with teenagers. Oh, that was fun. I met with about 10 of the teenage Finnish girls, and they were a little shy to begin with, but after a while they began to warm up and ask questions. Of course, they asked about boyfriends and all kinds of things. And we had to shoo them out of the house so that we could go on to our next appointment. Well, the next evening, I spoke to all the Helsinki girls, about 100 in number at a church, and these little girls were in the hallway, and when they saw me, they said, "Oh, Joyce," she said, "we had such fun yesterday. We can hardly wait for tonight." And I thought, well, maybe I can work with teenagers. Then I think, well, where will I live? Will I live in Europe? Will I live in the States? Will I have money to buy a house? Will I be able to manage financially? Will I have the health to work? I don't know. These questions do pop into my mind. But you know, they don't have to nag and to undermine one's joy and faith in the Lord. I think the verse that I believe Beth mentioned last night is one that is very, very pertinent. Psalm 56:3. "When I am afraid, I will put my trust in thee." And so someone said that courage is not the absence of fear. It is overcoming fear. And trust is not necessarily an absence of fear. It's overcoming that fear and trusting in the Lord. So these are some of the things that I'm experiencing as I'm growing older and as we naturally face issues in life. Now, there are two advantages, at least two, and further ones, and that is concerning ministry. I find that many young girls make comments on two things in my travels. One is that they say it's inspiring to see an older woman who still wants to serve the Lord wholeheartedly. And so from our vantage point, okay, we've walked with the Lord for many, many years. We can still say the Lord is worthy to be served. And so our encouragement to the girls to follow the Lord and to know Him carries some impact if we've done it ourselves for a number of years. And so it's very motivating to many of the girls. And secondly, many have said to me, "Joyce, it's encouraging to see an older single woman happy." Maybe marriage isn't the only way to be happy and fulfilled. I say, that's right. Wait for the right one, or don't have any at all. God's will is the best. And, of course, in some cultures, age has an advantage. It has that added respect and added hearing. So that's helpful, too. Then just to close with a few comments concerning the joys and rewards of following the Lord. As I've said before, the greatest joy to me is knowing that I am in God's will, doing what He wants me to do. And my motto in life is to know Christ and to obey Him. I'm a very simple soul, and I had to get my goal in one sentence. And when I get confused about what I'm supposed to be doing in life, I go back to my one sentence philosophy: to know Christ and to obey Him. It's fairly scriptural, too. As far as reward goes, the Lord promises rich reward we all have memorized 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is never in vain in the Lord. And sometimes when I'm tired or a little discouraged, I think, well, Lord, thank you for the promise that my labor is not in vain in you. I'll leave everything up to you, and I know that in due time you'll reward me 100-fold. So we may not see it all today. We will see it one day. And then the excitement of seeing lives changed by Christ. We are in the greatest work in the world. We see miracles happen day after day. It took a miracle to save a soul. And we're in the business of seeing dozens and dozens of people changed by God. What a marvel. And then the great joy of seeing others who have been raised up and who will want to co-labor with us in reaching others also. And I'm sure that the older women reps here are delighted as they see some of you younger ones coming in and helping to carry the load and the burden and the vision of the work here in the States. Some of the passages that we know in 3 John 4, John says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. That's joy. Or in 1 Thessalonians 1, these chapters are just fantastic, aren't they? 1 verses 2 and 3, Paul says, we give thanks to God always for all of you, making mention of you in our prayers, constantly bearing in mind your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ in the presence of our God and Father. And then over in the next chapter, for you are our glory and joy. Well, there's a lot of joy involved. Every person represents some joy. People. Knowing God and knowing people, of course, the greatest assets to life. But places enter in too. My life is far richer, broader, and more interesting because of following Christ. I've traveled around the world. I could never have done that on a nurse's salary. I've seen many lovely and famous places. I've had short breaks in the most exotic places in all the world that rich people can't even afford. I've seen the Colosseum in Rome where many Christians were thrown to the lions. The Parthenon in Athens. Beethoven's birthplace in Bonn. I doubt that I would ever have known that Beethoven was born in Bonn, Germany, if I'd never come over and served the Lord. Or Rembrandt's paintings in Amsterdam. Or opera in Vienna. Now I ask you, is that a dull, sacrificial life? I could be a nurse in a community hospital in the San Joaquin Valley in California. Well, that's all right if God called me. But I wouldn't have seen these things. Or people. Meeting in the Navigator Committee with an MP, a member of Parliament, in the House of Commons, with an Army General. Having lunch often with a buyer at Britain's largest and most well-known store. Knowing a well-known actor well. fellowshipping with godly missionaries in various parts of the world, knowing an opera singer who is making his debut at the Metropolitan this year, staff people who have left all to follow Christ. And I even have a personal accountant. An honorary one, but he and his wife were living in the south of England, and when I was responsible for the office, and he was doing STS studies, and in those days many people sent their studies in to be corrected and receive comments. So I had opportunity to meet Mike through his STS study, and later they invited me to come down to speak at their church in the youth groups there. And later I became a godmother for their youngest daughter. And he announced one day, he said, "You know, Joyce, you have meant so much to us." He said, "I'd like to take care of your books." So he just comes over every, you know, two or three times a year, and I sit there and give him a little bit of information, and he does the work. And that's my financial work for the year. A personal accountant. I'll close with Mark 10. Peter began to say to him, to Jesus, "Behold, we have left everything and followed you." Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or farms for my sake and for the gospel's sake, but that he shall receive 100 times as much now in the present age. Houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and farms, along with persecutions, and in the world to come, life eternal. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore." And our joy has just begun. Thanks.